welcome to the podcast. My name is Thomas J. Sotvedt.
And I'm your co-host, Vicky Sotvedt.
Which makes this the one, the only, Scaredy Cats. Bam, bam, bam.
Are we just, like, so distressed by the lack of sports we had to pretend to be sports so people would listen to us?
Yeah. Hey, everybody, we're sports now.
Congrats, you have found sports.
We found sports. Congratulations, the wait is over.
What sport? Doesn't matter. You found it.
You found them.
As you can tell, we're handling self-isolation really well.
Real well. Doing real well. So, Vicky.
Yes.
Have you ever been to a pet cemetery before?
I have not.
Never.
Unless you count, like, the back 40 of my uncle's farm where you bury the old farm dog when he dies.
Did you guys put little graves for the
There's, like,
the
a little cross with some sticks.
That would be a... If I don't know, how many bodies do you need to be considered a cemetery?
I don't know, they've been burying, like,
there's families.
Farm dogs there for a while.
But also, like, wealthy families would have the family cemetery plot on the land, and it's only, like, great-grandpa and great-grandma and their kids.
Yeah.
So, like,
I don't know.
I'd say then yes, you have been to a pet cemetery.
Under a loose definition, yes, I have been in a pet cemetery.
Okay, good. I'm glad that we established that. We actually have a few in Calgary here that you can go walk around. And
like real cemeteries for pets?
Yeah, real cemeteries for pets. So you can go on a walk and see all the dead good boys.
And good girls.
And good girls, yeah, of course. I don't really have a great opening for this one, but I do have an interesting factoid about the entire situation. So the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, which served as the real-life inspiration for Stephen King's Overlook Hotel in The Shining, of course Stephen King wrote Pet Sematary, had itself a small pet cemetery down the side for the, like, hotel's employees that was really old and quite, like, nice.
So two novels for the price of one, basically.
He has said that apparently he didn't even know that it was there.
Oh.
And the inspiration for Pet Sematary actually came after his daughter's cat was run over by a truck.
Aww.
And they buried the cat, and he was sitting in bed that night and was like, wouldn't it be weird if the cat came back to life but was all messed up?
Huh.
And he wrote the book.
That's a very Stephen King thought process, I gotta say.
I've had ideas kind of that way, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my... So in case you can't tell, we're gonna be watching Pet Sematary, specifically the new one, the 2019 one.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to be watching. But before I get into, like, factoids about the movie, Vicky, what do you know about this movie?
I know there's a Ramones song, which I thought they just really liked the first movie, but you informed me earlier this morning Stephen King actually asked them to write a song because his favorite band is the Ramones, which makes me extremely happy. I also know in the new one there was someone whose job was to rub Vaseline and coffee grounds on a cat to make it look dirty. And it was not the same person's job to clean the cat every day. That was a different person, which is why you should all go get a union, because you can have a job washing your cat. That's it. That's all I got for you. Oh, and the cat went to the red carpet premiere and wore a little bow tie and looked very fluffy.
I love how all of this is related to the cat actor.
And the Ramones. I had the Ramones
okay,
in there.
Okay, the Ramones and the cat in the movie.
That's all I got.
Cats, I should say.
That's all I got for you.
So Pet Sematary was directed by Kevin Kolsich and Dennis Widmeyer. They also directed Starry Eyes and Holidays together, which I think I've seen one of those. Can't remember. Producer Lorenzo Di Bonaventura.
Good Italian.
I know. The Transformers series in 1408. Mark Varaden. Transformers series. Steven Schneider. Insidious and Paranormal Activity.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
List.
Yeah, that's a lot of producers that did a lot of stuff. The slog.
I really enjoy the name sections because I enjoy watching you in real time attempt how to figure out how to say their names.
Oh, man, I know. I really should.
You should try them a couple before, but I enjoy watching you do it in real time. I'm not gonna lie.
So the screenplay is written by Jeff Buhler, and the story is by Matt Greenberg, who also wrote the screenplay for Halloween H2O. Second Halloween movie. That was the second one.
Is it actually called Halloween H2O?
20 years later.
H2O is the chemical formula for water. What does water have to do with anything?
I don't know.
Is it at a water park?
No. It's at a
then
hospital.
Why is it called H2O? That's a terrible name.
Anyway, it stars Jason Clarke as Lewis, Amy Seibetz as Rachel, John Lithgow as Judd, Leo Tonic Yeager, and JD as Church the Cat. There you go.
So there's four cats.
There were five originally, actually, but one of them got too scared on set.
Oh.
Which is actually my only factoid for this movie. I couldn't find anything else.
Is one of the cats got too scared on set to keep being the scary cat?
Yeah.
That's delightful.
That's the only fact I have about this movie.
That is a treasure.
So there you go.
Oh, that's the other thing I know about it, is that the cats had special roles. Like, there was one cat whose whole job was to be good at running, and there was somebody, another cat, whose job was to be good at jumping, mm-hmm. and things like that. So I did know there were multiple cats involved.
Mm-hmm.
I've only seen the one on the red carpet, though, which I think is the main cat.
Most screen time cat?
Most screen time
Or maybe cat. Just, like, Baltoed right in there and stole all of the...
Or maybe it's just the best behaved cat. Maybe it's just the best behaved cat.
Yeah. Maybe.
You can sit still in a bow tie, so we're taking you to the movie premiere.
Like, it's not even one of the four cats. It's totally another different cat.
Cat that looks like
that
the
looks
first,
like
four,
the first
cats,
four cats.
But it's very chill.
And they're like, we'll just tell people that this is the Pet Sematary cat. Everybody will get real jazzed.
Yes.
Anyway.
How do you find cats for movies? Do you just, like, go to the Humane Society in the hopes of finding identical
cats?
Well,
I believe that all five of the cats were rescues. And trained.
Excellent.
So.
And then I hope they got very nice homes after, like, somebody.
Oh, yeah. All of
them
got adopted out by the people on the movie.
Excellent.
Yeah, totally.
That is what I like to hear about cats in movies.
Well, there you go.
Is that they're rescued now.
Anyway, now we're gonna go watch that movie.
This movie is gonna be a real different tone than this intro, isn't it?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, so we will be right back with part two once we have seen it, where we will break down the movie for you. Okay, and we're back after being killed and buried in the Wendigo swamp.
Yeah, Wendigos have nothing to do with
at
this
all,
situation.
At all. I feel like it's kind of a crutch where it's like, we need some spooky...
Like, people might have heard of a Wendigo.
We need
we'll shoo that in there.
We need some spooky-sounding mumbo-jumbo, but like, yeah.
Wendigos are starvation monsters.
Starvation monsters that cause you to eat people.
Yes, and then become a Wendigo.
Exactly.
Has nothing to do with being buried.
No.
No.
Nothing at all.
No.
I think in the original script, or the original book, it was just the Mi'kmaq burial ground that had ancient powers, but didn't really try
There's ancient, what do they call them in the state? Ancient Indian burial grounds that
were buried
on somehow?
Yeah, exactly. It was originally one of those.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, so we just got done watching Pet Sematary 2019. So now's the part of the episode where we're going to break it down bit by bit for you. So if you don't want it to be spoiled, then go read the book, go watch the movie, go watch the sequel to that movie, forget about the sequel to the movie, and then go watch this movie.
Or just listen to us. That's also good. I mean, you already know our thoughts on Wendigos and their role in this film, so...
It's true, which is that they were unnecessary. They could have honestly just been like, the ground is bad, and I'd have been like, sounds good.
the ground is sour. Yeah, you sure are right. That's, it sure is.
Part of, like, the Lovecraftian horror. I mean, or at least he famously would be like, it's undescribable. Let me describe it for you. But certain things don't need over-explanation,
yes,
you know?
It doesn't need to be a Wendigo. Sometimes shit can just be bad.
Which is funny, because actually in a book, a movie that a couple of people in this movie worked on, a couple of the producers, in 1408, which is another Stephen King short story turned into a movie.
I've actually seen that movie.
Yeah. They don't try to explain it. They're just like, it's a bad room.
Yeah, they're just like, we just don't book it out.
So
just don't go in there.
Anyway. But anyway, so, if you don't want it spoiled for you, then stop listening here and go watch it. It's all right.
Yeah.
So, Vicky, you want to take us away here?
Yeah, so it starts kind of with this aerial shot of, like, this burning farm.
Yeah.
And it kind of seems... I'm condensing. This shot is, like, 3 minutes long. But
yeah, it pans over a big forest first, and it's pretty, but... It's
forest. Dark and misty, and then
dark
there's
and
this
misty.
Burning house, and then you see some, like, blood smears going up to the door, and then it cuts to...
Specifically it shows a burning house, and then the neighbor to the burning house, it zooms in on the neighbor's house, and there's blood leading up to the door, as Vicky said.
Yes, and then it cuts to almost The Shining, i.e. a nice drive through some woods, mm-hmm. going around a corner in the sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of shots that are specific callbacks to other... Stephen King horror films. Yeah.
The entire movie is pretty... It's got a few Easter eggs that I noticed anyway, which I'll call out as we reach them. But yeah, so there's blood in this house, but then we see the family moving in. It's Lewis and Rachel and Ellie and Gage.
And Church.
And their cat Church. So they're moving into this new place that's out in the middle of nowhere because I guess Lewis was a very, very busy overnight ER doctor and never got to see his family. So they've moved to this small town where he's going to work in the small clinic so that he can have more time with the kids.
I'm starting to understand the horror movie trope that I see memes about, which is the white family moving into the secluded house and the white dad talking about how this is going to be so good for us. And it's not.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
Yeah, so...
It's a total thing.
I'm going to get real suspicious if you're ever like, I found this beautiful house in the country. I think it'd be really good for us as a family.
Questionable history, but it's a steal.
Yeah, I'd be like...
Look at those French windows.
No, babe. No.
Yeah, you're totally right. It is a thing.
And so they get out of the car at their new, like, farmhouse-looking thing, and Lewis is like, what do you think? And Ellie's like, wow! And Lewis is like, wow, that's it? It's like, wow, lay off, Lewis. She's, like, 8.
Yeah, but then we see he's just messing with her. Yeah. He's like, you want to be the first person to go inside? And gives her the key. But then they do kind of a walk around, and he walks up the his driveway and almost is shocked by a semi suddenly appearing. Because his driveway just is heavily...
His wife jumps because they hear it. He's just going back to the car. The semi doesn't come close to him.
But yeah, their driveway in this property is basically heavy forest on either side of a road. And then the forest ends where the highway is. And occasionally semi-trucks go blowing past there without any kind of warning.
Yes.
So, foreshadowing.
Yes, and then Ellie and Rachel go outside, and the children of this town appear to be in a cult.
Yeah.
Because they are all in real weird masks, having a funeral procession for what appears to be a dead dog in a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of kids wearing masks with a dead dog in a wheelbarrow, walking through the forest.
They drum.
And Ellie's like, what's that? And Rachel's like, it looks like a funeral procession.
A procession, not just, a funeral
It
procession.
Looks like a procession. And I was like, yeah, weird fucking procession,
yes.
Rachel.
Which she describes, by the way, when Ellie asks, as like a parade, but not for fun. And then she's like, okay, that was weird. Let's go watch a show.
Never mind that.
And in a great moment, I found it cuts to Ellie watching, like, SpongeBob, and it managed to find a clip of SpongeBob to whenever it turned to be, like, Ellie from the back so you could see the screen. It's, like, SpongeBob and Patrick clearly very scared holding each other. I don't know enough about SpongeBob to hazard a guess at what's going on. But I was like, huh, that's neat. Even SpongeBob knows this is about to go bad.
Even SpongeBob knows it's a horror movie. But as they're walking kind of around, I guess Ellie decides to go into the forest after the weird mask children.
Well, after they're back at home, she realizes her mom is on the phone and won't notice.
Yeah, and her mom's on the phone with her mother. And while they're talking, she finds a picture of a young woman and hides that in a book, and then immediately cuts off conversation with her mom. It's like, I can't talk right now.
Yeah.
And we see the picture upsets her.
Yeah. And so we get to go see the actual pet cemetery.
Yeah, Ellie goes wandering after the creepy kids.
Yes. And pet cemetery is spelled wrong. It is spelled with an S.
Which they do point out in the movie.
They do. But I looked up why it was spelled with an S, because I wanted to know. Because I was like, Stephen King is a very prolific writer. He knows how to spell the word cemetery. And what I found, funny enough, was that it's because in the original book, it's like a sign misspelled by like a 4-year-old. That's how he thinks it's spelled cemetery, which is how Stephen King therefore chose to utilize it. But also, I discovered that a lot of Americans apparently think that's the British spelling, and a lot of Brits think that's the American spelling. Mm. So, good job, Stephen King, confusing both sides of the pond there.
Mm. But anyway, so yeah, there's this pet cemetery, and there seems to be like a weird beaver dam wall in the middle of this pet cemetery.
It's really huge.
Yeah, it's real, real, real huge. And
so
she
Ellie
starts to
like,
climb the wall.
And some old guy shows up and is like, hey, get off there! And then she gets stung by a bee.
Yeah, she's stung by a bee on her way down. And doesn't cry, and doesn't...
No, she just kind of looks sad
freak out.
At
She's
her
just
shin.
Like, oh, man.
So
I got stung.
Jed comes up and introduces himself and pulls the stinger out and puts some mud on it for her.
And he tells her that this is a pet cemetery where everybody buries their pets, and he takes her over to a plot of land that he points out, or a cemetery plot, and he points out that that's where his dog is buried.
Biffer.
Biffer.
Biffer the Sniffer.
Biffer the Sniffer. That's where his dog is buried, yeah.
Yes, and then Rachel shows up and is like, hey, random old guy, could you maybe not be trying to have a conversation with my 8-year-old child?
And he's like, don't worry, I'm your neighbor. And she's like, okay.
Well, she's like, a likely story.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And is like, okay, Rachel, okay, Ellie, we have to go home right yeah. now. Yeah. Later, they're putting Ellie to bed, and Lewis and Rachel choose to have that moment to kind of hash out how they're going to tell Ellie about death in front of Ellie, mm-hmm. which is not the time and place to have that conversation. And they're, like, talking about how, like, well, you know, your Nana's up in heaven watching you, and Lewis is like, well, maybe. And then in true kid fashion, Ellie is like, what about your sister who died as a kid, Mom?
Yeah, and we learn that, I guess, Rachel's sister had some kind of disease that caused her spine to twist.
And it sounded like spinal bifida or something.
Yeah, and her bones to twist around, and it caused her to look pretty freaky. And how she was kind of scared of her sister as a kid, because her sister was bedbound, moaning and wailing.
Yes.
All day.
And also hated her, apparently.
And hated her, and would tell her that she would end up just like her one day, and blah, blah, blah.
Yes. And then we go to the doctor's office. Dr. Lewis is like, man, I really don't want to look at any more people with sore throats. Are we going to have some sandwiches?
Yeah.
And then some like, girl runs in covered in blood, and she's like, his head! His head!
And because, Lewis is like, that sounds serious.
Yeah, and it is very serious.
It's very serious. So in comes a local university kid.
Victor Pusnow?
Pascal?
Pascal, that's
Victor Pascal, who was hit by a truck and dragged underneath it for several feet. And yes. He shows it.
Yeah, you can, like, see parts of his brain and his bones. It's not good.
He's pretty messed up. Dr. Lewis starts to try to tend to him, but I got the sense that this clinic was kind of overwhelmed by it and clearly not prepared for something of this.
Well, it's like, that's the kind of thing where they would rush you to the ER of the best hospital in the city, and you hope you have 20 units of blood available and 5 surgeons right there, and that's just not what a small town has. So, poor Victor dies.
He does die, and so Lewis is trying to tend to him, but yeah, he passes away. And then he turns away and does the doctor thing, like, oh, I couldn't save him.
And he's taking off his gloves.
He's taking off his gloves, and then Victor suddenly sits up.
And he's like, hey, Doc. And then I forget what he says, but it's some spooky shit.
He says, like, don't go beyond the wall or something like that.
Or some things are not meant to be.
Some things.
It's spooky. It's something spooky because he's supposed to be
basically,
dead.
Basically, he's trying to warn him about the cemetery and saying the things that are dead should stay dead.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's basically what
he says. To that effect.
And then when the nurse comes to check
Oh, you shouldn't
on him,
go beyond the barrier. I wrote a note.
Oh, you shouldn't go beyond the barrier. There you go.
Yeah. The nurse comes back and is like, doctor? And Lewis is like, what? And Victor is still very dead and is not, in fact, sitting up talking to him.
No.
He's just dead.
He's just dead.
I gotta say, I'm also starting to understand all the memes about how horror movies have one black character so they can kill them immediately. Mm-hmm. I gotta say, I am seeing that trend, and it's not great, guys.
No.
It's not great.
No.
It's not diverse if your character's in the movie for 1 minute so they can die horribly. I'm just saying.
Yes.
Anyways.
There's a couple... This movie has a lot of close calls in traffic. Kind of up to the what happens, and so that there's a couple of more scenes of people getting cut off and almost hit. And
well, there's really just one, which is him. He's going home, and he's clearly very upset because he couldn't save Victor, and he's about to go, and then this truck goes, and he realizes he had a stop sign, he didn't look, and so he's fine. He gets home.
And then we get a very Wes Anderson shot of Judd's house and Ellie walking up to it.
Yeah,
and knocking on the door.
She's gonna go take him some cookies.
Yeah, gonna go take him some cookies.
And she just wanders inside.
Starts going through his things.
And I gotta say, I've never actually known a kid that old to just wander inside. Like, by that point, you have some sense of, like, don't just wander into people's
strangers'
homes.
Especially strangers whose homes you've never been in before. Like,
yeah, it was weird, because I found through the movie, she's supposed to be, like, almost 9, but she's written like she's, like, 5 or 6.
Yeah, she sort of is a dumb 9-year-old.
Like, she's written as a child who's much younger than her, both in the way she responds to things. Like, because she does respond with the innocence of, like, a 5-year-old, but it's like, but you're much past that stage, you know? It's weird. Mm. It's like whoever was writing the script had a 5-year-old. and hadn't actually talked to a 9-year-old and assumed that he could just write his 5-year-old and no one would notice.
Yeah, maybe.
It's but, very weird.
Anyway, she notices that Judd's got a gun, and Judd interrupts her perusing of his stuff, though, and's like,
Do you always just walk into people's houses
and go through the things? What the hell, child?
Yeah, and she's like, come meet my cat, Church!
Mm-hmm.
Which is short for Winston Churchill.
Yeah, and so they invite Judd over for dinner, and it's clear that the family and Judd are becoming kind of close.
Yes, and there's another thing I've noticed about horror movies as we've watched more, which is that in small towns where everyone knows something's up, they're like, maybe if I'm vague enough, that'll dissuade these new people. I'll never say anything directly about it, but I'll vaguely intonate they shouldn't do some stuff.
Yeah, I was wondering how much of people's weird behavior in this movie, because there's some weird choices that are made, are the thing in the forest influencing them. Because Judd is clearly influenced by the forest later.
That's true.
And, like, it's been shown that it's got a clear pull and some weird power. So I've been... I was sort of excusing all the crazy, stupid decisions that were being made
by... Well, I mean, it was kind of the same thing from, like, Dead Silence. It's like, everyone seems to know the rules, but no one's gonna tell them the rules, and they're gonna selectively choose to ignore the rules.
But I got the sense that instead of just, like, people with a superstition that they're not going to tell you about, it was actually like they know they shouldn't talk about it, but this thing wants to be talked about, so it's going to influence
Wendigo,
them. Whatever it was wants to be talked about and used.
Yes. Anyways, after he vaguely intonates that they shouldn't go back into the woods, Lewis goes to bed, and then he kind of like wakes up,
and he's being called to by a voice from behind the wall.
By Victor's voice specifically. And so he goes out his door, which is suddenly in the middle of the forest.
Yeah, there's a lot of transitions into that forest.
Yeah, and Victor's ghost is like, you tried to help me, now let me help you.
And then
there are living and dead boundaries, and the ground is sour on the side where the dead walk. Yeah,
specifically he's like, the ground is sour! And that transitions to Gage waking Lewis up in bed going, rawr, rawr.
Yes, and Lewis is like, ha ha, what a silly nightmare, and then he takes his blanket off and his feet are super dirty, and he's like, oh,
and he's like, oh shit, I was sleepwalking.
Yes, and he's like, what time is it? And Rachel's like, it's late, and it's like, that's not a valid answer to that question.
No, she says, like, it's 8, you slept in.
No, she says, it's late, you slept in. But, like, actually doesn't give him any indication of what time it is.
There's no, like, pull out the smartphone, it's 11:30.
Yeah, or even, like, it's past 10, it's just late. What is late? We'll never know.
But anyway, so I guess it's Halloween now.
Yeah, the time in this movie is sort of...
Well, I got the sense that it expects us to accept the days are passing in between.
Right, but it's never clear, like, how many days or how long.
No, I kind of got the sense that they were there for a couple of months.
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway, so it's Halloween now, and Ellie's made some friends, and they're all ready to go trick-or-treating.
Yep.
Lewis is getting ready to load them all into the car to, I guess, drive them into town.
They're, like, in kind of the
far off, they're outside
of
town.
It's not suburbs. It's, like, small-town suburbs.
Yeah.
Which where it's is, just like, one house every, like... 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so he's gonna drive him into town, but then Judd comes over and is like, I got something to show you,
Lewis. Well, he, like, waves from the end of the driveway, like, we gotta go look.
Got a situation over here.
And it's Church.
And it's Church. Church has been hit by a car. And
well,
a
truck. It's implied truck, that it's one of those same
trucks, yeah. And it's on the side of the road. Church is on the side of the road, very, very dead.
Yes,
and Lewis has a conundrum, like, oh God, how am I gonna explain this to my daughter, especially since we had the weird conversation about death.
Yeah. And
Judd says, I'll take you to help you bury him tonight, but it has to be tonight.
Yes. And then so while we're waiting for that, Judge goes to tell Rachel, like...
Judge?
Or, sorry, Lewis goes to tell Rachel, like, Church got hit by a truck.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And then we get, like, the random backstory of what happened, because Rachel's like, I'm just so sad because it made me think about Zelda, which is my sister, who had a twisted spine. And also my parents left me alone with her when I was like 7 years old, which is a terrible move because I was not in any way qualified to be her caretaker at 7 years old, and I used a dumb waiter to send her food.
Because I was scared of her.
Right. Which then she somehow crawled into and fell to her death.
Yeah, I think the implication was that, like, when she sent the food up in the dumbwaiter, the sister had to get out of bed to try and make her way over to it, but then fell into it because her spine and back is all messed up.
Yeah.
But anyways, her sister ended up falling down the dumbwaiter and getting crushed, basically, from the fall.
Well, No, because she fell on top of the dumbwaiter. Like, nothing fell on top of her. It was just a fall, and she already had shitty bones. So, yeah. Like, broken neck.
Yeah, yeah. And so she's all twisted up when we get a flashback of her sending it up in the dumbwaiter, and then the smashing sound, and her opening it up, and her sister being all twisted on top of the dumbwaiter.
Yeah, and Rachel's like, and then I thought she was living in the walls. So whatever you do, just make Church, like, not dead when you tell Ellie. And yeah. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and throughout the movie, she has, like, scenes where she is haunted by her sister, maybe?
Yeah, well, it was weird, because it was like, if it had been, like, part of why they were moving was just she had been thinking about her sister a lot. Like, it was just weird to have, like, the cat be hit by a car and that be the catalyst for this random piece of backstory.
Yeah, but, like, I was wondering... Yeah, anyway, so, whatever you do, we'll just say he ran away, basically, is...
Yeah, and so it's nighttime, and Lewis and Judd go down, and Lewis hears a voice, obviously, mm-hmm. and is like, hey, I know a better spot to bury Church. Mm-hmm. And Lewis is like, what? What's wrong with this spot?
Well, we see Judd being influenced by the wall a little bit.
That's what I mean, he hears something. Yeah, there's a voice.
Yeah, there's whispering coming from the other side, and he's like, oh.
Yes, and listen, it's never a good idea to climb over a wall to bury your dead cat. I'm just, cats are good. We love our cats. If you have to hike a fucking mountain to bury your cat, and that's you're going too hard.
There's like a hobbits going to Isengard sort of like trek across the land to get to this place.
You gotta climb this like 20-foot wood wall, and then you gotta like go through some like super misty ravines, and it's
it's not close. It's not close at all, and it's in like a swamp, and you have to kind of wade through some water to get to it. But anyway, it's up on this hill. And there's lightning all over, and it looks like Skeletor's realm.
It's not great.
Not great.
And so they bury Church, and they go back to the next day.
But yeah, and Lewis has remarkably little questions about, like, why are you hiking me across the state, Judd? Why are we hiking through this swamp, Judd?
He's like, this is a reasonable amount of effort to bury Church, my cat. It's not.
Even though we just passed out of a really legit, like, actual pet cemetery. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Judd doesn't explain to him, like, what we're doing is gonna bring your cat
Judd
back to
life. No,
Judd
is just like, hey, I have a better spot.
Yeah, I got a better spot. It's in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, anyways.
But they bury Church, but Lewis does remark that, like, he feels something in this place. And Judd's like, yeah, you feel that? It's locals used to think this place had power.
Yeah, and so it comes to the morning, and Lewis and Rachel are sitting down with Ellie, and they're like, listen, your cat Church ran away. And Ellie's like, no, he's right there. And they're like...
Or like, he came last night and was sitting outside my window.
And they're like, I'm sorry, come again.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, like, just look. And so at this point, Lewis notices, like, little dirty cat paw prints.
Mm-hmm, going into the closet.
Yeah, and it's Church looking pretty gross.
And he hisses at him.
Yeah, and Lewis, at no point here, is like, hey, you were super dead. I picked you up. You were super dead. I wrapped you in a plastic bag, which we watched you do, and then I buried you in the middle of fucking nowhere. Why are you sitting in this closet hissing? He's like, oh, I guess Church was just in shock and not actually dead that whole time. And it's like,
golly. And she's like, you're a terrible doctor. And I'm like...
No, she's like, good thing you're not a fucking vet.
And I was like, yeah, no kidding. But then, so then Lewis goes over to Judd's house and he's like, WTF, mate.
He's like, Church,
and I'm like,
alive.
And I'm like, now you want to talk.
Yeah. And Judd is basically like, oh yeah, we buried my family dog out there, and he came back and attacked my mom, and then we had to shoot him again.
He came back kind of mean, and kind of wrong, and off, and he thinks that maybe Church would have been okay, because Church was a good cat, but his dog always had a mean streak in him, so.
Right, he basically is like, listen, I may have not explained that I was helping you bring your dead cat back to life, but that's a you problem now, this is not my situation.
He literally is like, that weird cat is your cat now.
Right, it's like, that's your cat. And I just feel bad, because, like, poor Church just wants to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Church doesn't want any of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's been rough. They've had a rough time. And so Lewis and Rachel are gonna get it on. They're gonna relax from their stress.
Mm-hmm.
Except then Church shows up eating a still alive bird.
Yeah. And
which kind of kills the mood.
And they're like, Jesus. And they get rid of the bird and... But I think before that, we do get a scene with Rachel where there's creaking in the walls, and she moves over to into the bathroom, and it sounds like the washing machine is on, but then she opens up the medicine cabinet, and the medicine cabinet is the door to the dumbwaiter, and she's looking at the dumbwaiter, and she looks up, and her sister falls down towards her screaming, and she slams the medicine cabinet, and then backs off, and Lewis is like, what's wrong? And she's like, I don't want to talk about it. I'm really stressed right now. And that's at the point where I'm like, okay, it's got to be PTSD then, specifically what she's seeing. Because
it's,
at this point, you'd be like, I'm haunted. I'm haunted by my sister's
ghost. It feels like it's a second movie.
It does in a way. It does sort of feel like a weird B-plot.
It's like
the sister thing.
Like, it becomes relevant at the very end for, like, 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole rest of the film, you're like, this is just sort of a weird other movie about feeling guilty about your sister and...
Yeah.
It's a strange B plot.
And yeah. But anyway, apparently the horrible things that she is seeing is normal enough that she doesn't want to immediately move.
So. Yeah, or she's just like, I'm just stressed because Church got hit by a car or whatever. Anyways, so Lewis goes to get Church because Church is clearly having a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Church goes running to the basement and there's this like hole in the wall. It's not even a door.
Yeah.
It's like a weird, tiny, dark hallway.
It's like a small door into like a washing machine room, like not kind of thing.
Even it's like
I've seen those in basements before.
Okay, it didn't make sense to me. Anyways, but Church, the undead cat who's really aggressive now, is like no, and runs away from the door.
Yeah.
So Lewis is like, obviously, I should go see what's scaring the undead cat in the door.
I'm real curious behind this door now, and so he walks through it, and it takes him back into the forest. And he's back in the pet cemetery. And there's the Victor, the undead Victor Pascal kid, saying, like, sometimes dead is better.
Yeah, and then some random monster-y face shows up, which I guess you're supposed to think is the Wendigo?
I don't know.
And he, like, falls backwards out of the door, and then he's in his house again.
And then he's in his house again, yeah.
And apparently...
Oh, and he sees the traffic lights of a truck speeding towards him.
Oh, right.
And that knocks him back on the ground. And again, I'm like, okay, because he's normal after that. For a while until Ellie's birthday.
This is fine.
Like, so I'm wondering, it's part of it has to be that they're being influenced to stay, because any sane person after going on like 2 consecutive drug trip, like dream sequences like that, yes, would be like, nah.
And I see from my notes here that he should have listened to Victor's ghost, and it's after he falls out that Rachel gets up to go to the bathroom and hears that noise,
and that's when
the dumbwaiter scene is. So I guess the ghost of Zelda has moved in. I gotta say, again, horror movie memes, I'm learning so many of them as I watch, but it really is the dad who's determined to stick it out, isn't it? Every time.
So eventually, Lewis tries to euthanize Church, but isn't able to do it when Church stops struggling and just looks at him and goes, meow. And he's like, ah, oh, crap. So he decides
he's suckered by the undead cat.
Yeah, and
like,
so
just take it to a vet and be like, he's got rabies. You just got to put him down.
Yeah, and so he decides to drive Church out to the middle of nowhere and drop him off in the middle of the highway. And this is where we get our movie poster scene as he drives away and Church is just sitting in the middle of the highway watching him go.
And what an actor that Church is.
Good.
I guess all 4 of him.
All 4 Churches.
All 4. They're all good. Mm-hmm. They're all such talented boys.
Mm-hmm. But then we go to Ellie's birthday.
Yep.
Ellie's 9th birthday.
It's a good time.
Yeah.
Having a party.
Everybody's having a good time party. And I guess one of the party games is to spin Lewis around and then have him chase people.
With a blindfold on. Yep, he can't see.
And so Ellie goes running to hide kind of in the trees close by the driveway. And Gage moves out onto the street among the cars.
Yes. Because he's like 3. He doesn't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And then Ellie sees Church in the road.
Church in the middle of the road, walking towards her, and she's like, oh,
she's
my
like,
cat came back.
Church, yay! And she specifically mentions before this moment that it's her fault Church ran away, because when Church scratched her, she didn't want...
Because there is a scene, I think, just before the birthday when the parents once again are like, sorry, your cat ran away, after leaving him out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, because Church scratched her, and he tried to attack Gage, and that's why they decided they had to get rid of Church.
Yeah.
But she thinks,
yeah, that's the other scene.
Yeah, we
forgot
about that entirely.
There is a scene where Church is in Gage's cradle and hissing and growling and Gage is crying.
Which is why you just gotta take it to the vet and be like, cat's got rabies, man.
Yeah.
It's an undead cat.
But anyways, Ellie goes to meet her pet in the middle of the road. And then we see Gage seeing his sister. He starts running down the driveway towards the highway. And we also see a car coming.
And at this particular moment, Lewis has taken his blindfold off and sees Gage running to the road. He doesn't realize Ellie's there yet.
No, he doesn't.
He does see his son.
I don't think he even knows Ellie's there at all, right?
Well, he will soon.
Yeah, and so, but he starts sprinting down the driveway, shouting for his son as this truck is coming towards him and his gauge is running towards the highway, and you're like, oh, fuck. But then at the very, very last second, he grabs his son out of the middle of the road and pulls him back, but the...
And the truck is trying to swerve to avoid him, so the truck stops, but the tank on the truck does not stop.
And it flies right into Ellie.
Yes, and at this point, Lewis just has enough time to look up from grabbing gauge to realize Ellie's about to get nailed by this tank from this truck.
Yeah.
Rip Ellie.
So, rip Ellie.
But somehow not Undead Church.
Yeah, I don't know. He moved away, I guess. Cats run fast. Who knows?
She's holding him.
But anyways, that's an interesting switcheroo from the original source material, because everybody knows, of course, from the book and the movies, it's Gage who dies, not Ellie. And so that was a smart switch around.
There is a really good use of a sudden no sound here, where it's like, we kind of, you know, the montage that I'm now learning is classic in horror movies, where they realize it's dead, and then it kind of cuts to the funeral, and then it kind of cuts to the aftermath of the funeral, and you're getting a little bit of sound back slowly. Mm-hmm. A piece at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel decides that she can't be here.
Yeah, she's like sitting anymore. In bed cradling the bunny that they gave their daughter for her birthday that's all ripped because she had it with her when she was hit by the car, and I think it's covered in her daughter's blood.
Yeah, it
and she's
is.
Cradling that in bed, and I'm like, ooh.
It's rough losing your 9-year-old daughter.
Not a good scene.
No, and so she's like, we just gotta leave, and Lewis is like, okay, you go ahead. I just got a couple things
to take care
that
of
I gotta
the clinic.
Do. And you're like, Lewis, you saw what it did to church. Mm-hmm. Lewis.
And we see him miserable in his house, and then he sits out around a campfire with Judd one night, and they're drinking. Yeah, does Judd talk to him about not doing?
Judd kind of starts to... Judd is cautioning him away from it, basically. Mm-hmm. And then Lewis slips something in a glass while he's pouring two drinks and gives Judd that glass, so Judd passes out.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably because Judd has or will figure out Lewis's plan and will attempt to stop him. And so after Judd is asleep, Lewis goes to the cemetery.
Yeah, we see him digging up his daughter and then bringing her to the cemetery.
Yeah, we're at the point of the movie where everyone is having a bad time now.
Everybody's having a bad time. So he starts digging a big hole with a rock in the on the hill.
Yes, and Victor the whole time, the ghost of Victor is like... Don't do it, Lewis.
I'm telling you, you don't want to do it. My man, don't do it. And then eventually he's like, I couldn't stop you. I tried.
Yeah.
And he fades
away. The ghost
away.
Of Victor is just like, there is only so much I can do for you. And meanwhile, at her parents' house, Rachel runs into the room with a crying Gage who's screaming, Pascal, Pascal.
Which I'm like, is this kid, does this kid have The Shining?
Well, and we can see as she gathers him up, the ghost of Victor is standing in a corner
exactly.
of his face all fucked up.
Which I'm like, okay, telekinetic cat child. Interesting.
Well, the cat is irrelevant to this scene particularly, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Does Church come back? Yes, it does. At the
very
end.
At the very end.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
And at Judd's house.
I guess that's true, yeah.
So he buries his daughter, and then he goes back home, and he's sleeping in bed, and he hears creaking downstairs, and the door open.
Yes. And he goes, and he sees muddy footprints leading on the porch into his door.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, there's Ellie.
Yeah, he moves...
With lots of blue veins in her face and an eye that won't open, and my dude, she's still so dead.
Yeah, she looks very, very, very dead. But she's alive, and she's like, where am I? What the heck?
Yeah, and so he's given her a bath in a scene, which is very similar to the bath scene in Carrie.
Very
it's the
similar.
Same angles while she's, like, pouring water on her hair to get the blood out of it.
And he's just like, it's kind of gross. He's ripping away at her hair because it's all matted.
He was trying to brush it.
And he's trying to brush it, and he's just pulling big clumps out. And then eventually he tears off a patch of hair so big that he can see the staples in the back of her skull.
He realizes that the hair was not actually attached. The hair has kind of almost like hair extensions been re-added to cover the mortician's staples from making her look nice and pretty to be buried in.
Exactly.
And she's like, what's up? And he's like, you just have a tangle in your hair.
Don't worry about it, my love child. My lovely child.
Yes. And he's like, it's a... And she's like, where was I? Like, where did I go? And she's like, it's okay, you're back now. You're covered in blue veins with an eye that won't open and chunks of your hair coming out. But you're not dead. It's fine. Mm-hmm. You're good.
And so he goes to bed and wakes up the next morning to the Sugar Plum Fairies.
Yeah, isn't that a tonal shift?
Music downstairs. And he heads downstairs to find his daughter wearing her ballet outfit.
She's wearing the dress she was buried in.
The dress she was buried in, which... and she's dancing around like a ballerina, and it's been shown in a couple scenes that Ellie... dances like a ballerina.
Right, but she's also breaking stuff.
But she's also swinging her arms and smashing vases and knocking stuff off, and then she starts angrily growling and throwing things off of shelves.
Yes, and meantime...
In the meantime.
Lewis is not answering his phone.
He's not answering his phone.
So Rachel calls Judd and is like, hey Judd, can you go check on my husband?
Can you go check on Lewis? And Lewis is like, stop breaking shit, Ellie, undead Ellie.
Yes, and so Judd shows up after realizing he's been drugged, and he's like, hey, Lewis, sup?
Yeah, he's specifically woken up by another truck flying by his property.
Yeah. And Lewis doesn't open the door, really, about it. Like, doesn't let Lewis see anything.
No, well, Lewis is super sketchy, and he's like, everything's fine, don't worry about it. And yeah. Judd notices that he's got dirt under his fingernails.
Yes.
And his feet are kind of muddy. And he's like, if you did something, there's still time to undo it.
And then we see Ellie in the background disappear from the hallway, so clearly she heard that.
Yeah. So Lewis closes the door on Judd, and Judd's like, well, fine, and walks away. But he turns back to see in the window of the upper story Ellie staring at him. And he goes, oh, shit. Heads to his house, locks the door, and grabs his revolver. And we see at this point that Ellie is also retrieved, it's like a golden...
It's a scalpel.
It's a golden, like, award-looking scalpel. Like, maybe he won it.
Or, like, an old scalpel.
An old scalpel, something like that. So she grabs a scalpel, and Judd, with his gun, starts to hear sound upstairs.
Yes, and so he's going to go look for it.
Yeah, he heads upstairs, and he's like, I know you're up here, because he clearly knows that Ellie is...
Back
and bad. And he's checking every single room, and we get a scene where he's staring at a bed, and we're getting shots under the bed, and of his ankle, and then back to him, and you're like, whoa, and he kicks the bed, and there's nothing there.
No, and he's like, it's chill, I'm gonna go downstairs.
And then there's another sound behind him, and he turns back to see Church at the top of the stairs, staring at him.
Yes, and then he gets got through the ankle with a scalpel.
Yeah, and then Ellie, who's hiding under the stairs, stabs him through the ankle with a scalpel, and he falls down and shoots his gun off, hits the floor, and Ellie starts stalking over him, and she's wearing the mask, like the rabbit mask that one of the kids in the funeral procession earlier were wearing.
Yes.
And she starts telling him about how he brought back his wife, and how his wife was never the same after that, and his wife is suffering in hell for what he did to her. And she pulls up her mask to reveal the face of his wife.
Yeah.
Chastising him.
Yeah. And then she stabs him to death with the scalpel.
Yeah, and then her face turns back to Ellie. And she's like, you're gonna suffer in the same way. And he's like, you just try it. And then she jumps on him and stabs him to death with a scalpel.
Yeah.
Rip Judd.
Rip Judd. And so, at this point, Rachel and Gage show back up, because I guess Rachel was just so distressed, she had to go find Lewis.
Oh, fun Easter egg. On their way to the house, once she's like, Lewis isn't picking up my calls, we need to go check on him. So she takes Gage, and they're stuck in traffic, and there's a traffic sign in the background that says Derry is 20 miles away, which of course is Derry, Maine, which is an important town in a lot of Stephen King works.
Right, which I don't know yet. It's not one of the horror movie memes I'm putting together.
Yeah. But anyway, so she arrives with Gage and is like, why aren't you picking up your calls? We were worried about you.
And then Ellie shows up and she's like, what? You're dead. What? Mm-hmm. And Lewis is like, it's fine.
It's fine. It's your daughter. Give your daughter a hug. And Rachel's like, nope. This isn't good. This isn't right. I don't like this. No, sir.
Yeah, and so... she goes upstairs with Gage and locks the door, and Lewis convinces her to let him in. He's like, listen, I just needed more time. You saw I buried Church and brought him back. And Rachel, smart lady that she is like, yeah, and did you not notice how fucking wrong Church was when he came back?
Yeah, you crazy kid.
And he's like, Ellie's fine. And she's like, no, Ellie is very much not fine, my dude. Lewis is like, sorry, I had a moment there. Lewis is like... Oh, yeah, I'll show you. I'll bring Ellie back. And then we get this really cool shot out the door where he realizes Ellie has actually gone.
Yeah.
She's gone to Judd's.
And so he finds, Judd dead, and he's like, oh, fuck, I may have done a bad.
Yeah, and he hears that, and so then it cuts to Rachel in the room, and she starts to hear noises. And this would be a real specific nightmare for Rachel, because she spent her whole life waiting for her dead sister, who she thought was living in the walls again, to come get her, and now her kid is back from the dead. Like,
Yeah, totally.
Like, obviously, that'd be alarming.
But she has a weird, like, waking nightmare almost of her in bed, in her sister's bed, and her body starts to twist and get gross, and then the dumbwaiter on the other side of the room starts to open, and her sister crawls out towards her, saying that she'll never get out of
bed. Now you'll never get out of bed.
Now you'll never get out of bed again. And that transitions to her waking up and kind of looking around, and then Ellie jumps out and starts stabbing her with the scalpel.
Well, with the kitchen knife, actually.
Or a kitchen knife, yeah.
Yeah, and she manages to, like, fight her off and bar her from the room long enough that when Lewis, who has now found the dead Judd and is running back.
Yeah, so they go to the bathroom, and she smashes open the window and starts lowering Gage out the window for Lewis to catch.
Yeah, and he grabs Gage and puts him in a car and is like, don't unlock the car for anyone.
Even Ellie, he says.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Rachel gets stabbed.
Well, I think that before he even brings Gage, because he catches Gage and then is looking up at her, and she gets stabbed in the back.
Well, she gets stabbed again. She gets stabbed a few times.
She gets stabbed in the back, and then she falls over, and Ellie kind of is sitting with her, stabbing her in the stomach slowly over and over again.
Yeah.
Basically saying that her sister burns in hell, and she's going to burn in hell.
There's a lot of burning in hell.
Yeah.
In these last 10 minutes.
And that Daddy said that there was nothing when you died, but he was wrong, but it's not heaven, and she'll be there soon.
Yeah, and Lewis shows back up.
After she's been killed, yeah.
Well, not quite, because she manages to say, don't bury me in that place.
Right.
And then Ellie shows up again and nails him with a chair.
Yeah, so yeah, he finds his wife dying on the ground, and she requests that he doesn't bury her there. And then, Ellie hits her dad over the head with a chair. And then we see Ellie dragging the mom's body through the woods again.
Which raises a lot of questions about where this place is relative to the house.
Tremendous strength to haul it up that wall, too.
Yeah, and, like, it seemed real far away, but it's not.
Undead powers.
I don't know.
Magic undead powers.
I don't know.
So, Lewis wakes up and heads towards the car. Then he realizes the car is locked because the keys were, I guess, with Rachel. So he can't get in. So he's got to go back to the pet cemetery because Rachel's body's gone. So he assumes that's where Ellie is taking her. And he heads up the path and finds the pet cemetery sporting more fog than a Metallica concert.
Yes, and Ellie is in it trying to stab him.
Yeah, and so he starts fighting his daughter, throws her on the ground, and he gets on top of her and he's strangling her. And she's reaching for the knife, but he moves the knife away. And it just as it looks like he's about to kill Ellie, he gets stabbed in the back with a
weather vane.
With a weather vane that's been plucked up from the ground by, we see Rachel, who is now alive and well again.
Well, alive.
Realive and not well.
Not well. No. And then we kind of cut back to Gage in the car, and we finally get the scene from the very beginning, which is the burning of Judd's house.
Judd's house is burning down. We see the blood in the house.
And the blood, which we realized was from Rachel being dragged out.
Yeah, and we see Gage in the car as he's watching his three family members
walk
up the driveway towards him and surround the car. And then the movie ends with the beep beep of a car being unlocked.
Yes, and that's it. That's the film.
And that's Pet Sematary.
Yep.
In a nutshell, no.
I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery either. Please don't bury me in one.
So yeah, that was Pet Sematary. So now's the part of the podcast where we're going to assign it some ratings. So Vicky, on a scale of 1 to 10, how well made was this movie?
I'd probably give it a 9.
Yeah?
It had really, really good sound design, particularly, that I found was really effective. It relied a bit on jump scares. Mm. But, like, it had really good atmosphere, I think, which made the jump scares
effective. They earned them, at least.
Well,
a little.
They earned some of them. I really enjoyed the care it clearly took in referencing all of the other Stephen King, like, very carefully recreating those shots in movies that are now, you know, 30 and 40 years old. So, yeah, I'm saying 9.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna give it an 8. It's, there's a couple of really good shots. The acting's okay. Yeah, I think my only thing is I wish it had shown maybe more people being manipulated so that it made some of the dumb character decisions make a little bit more sense.
Yes, and I would have liked, actually, if Ellie was written like a 9-year-old and not a 5-year-old.
Yeah, that was not great.
That was a little annoying.
But besides that, like, every single time a car went by in that movie, I was like, ah.
Yeah, it's true.
So, I'm gonna give it an 8. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy it?
Like, 6.5.
6.5?
Yeah.
You and your point fives.
I don't know.
Why can't it just be a 6 or a 7?
Because, I don't know. I liked the concept. A lot of the movie was fun to watch. I had a lot of trouble with some of the, like, it's a Wendigo. I'm like, no, it's not. That's the wrong monster entirely for this. And why is your sister there? What? Like, so there were some things that, like, the whole B-plot with the sister, I didn't really, like, until that one particular nightmare was so irrelevant.
It was pretty spooky, but, like,
it was spooky, but it was, it felt like a different movie, which I think is part of why I didn't enjoy this movie as much as I could have, because I felt like I was supposed to be trying to follow two different stories. What about you?
I give it a 7. There's a couple, like I said, I just enjoyed some of the shots, and a few of the scares were earned, and I mostly just like how they were able to mix it up instead of just doing a shot-for-shot remake, while also feeling incredibly faithful at the same time somehow. So
I've never seen the original,
totally,
so I can't comment.
Or read the book. No. So
7. Heather Ramone song.
Yeah, so 7 for me. It was pretty good.
Okay.
Now on a scale of 1 to 10, how scary was it?
I'm going to give it, like, an 8. I got pretty tense. I got pretty ramped up there.
What was the scariest thing? What got you?
I think just the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that there was any moment particularly where it was like, ah!
And when Ellie jumps out at Rachel there?
No, well, I mean, we kind of knew that was coming, right? Like, I don't know. There, like, I was more and less scared in certain scenes, but I don't think there, like, I know Gerald's game, what the scariest scene was for me. I didn't really have that. I think just the atmosphere generally was, like, a really good creepy atmosphere that got more intense as the movie went on. So I'm going to give it, like, an 8.
Okay, cool. I give it 5. Yeah, it's got some spooky moments. It's not the spookiest, but, middle-of-the-road spooky. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have any, like, claims to back that rating up. It's just,
That's okay. We're a podcast. We don't have to prove anything we say on here.
I don't care. Either you've learned that you historically agree with me, or you don't.
You're right.
A 5.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's it for Pet Sematary. We hope you guys enjoyed us breaking it down for you.
Yes, funny enough, this was the one episode our cat did not attempt to comment on.
I was really hoping that Joan would come by at some point and I could make a joke.
Nope.
Thanks for nothing, Joan.
Nope, she's sleeping. Like the useless potato she is. That's
okay,
we still love her.
The one time we needed her. She lets us down. But anyways, so next time we're going to be coming back with...
Brave Encounters.
Yeah, ghost movie.
Yes, which is actually going to be the first ghost movie we watch. Actually, not like Dead Silence, which is what I thought that was.
It's kind of a ghost.
It's not. It's a movie about ventriloquist dummies.
Yeah, but the ghost is the main villain. Anyway.
It's not like a ghost movie, though.
No.
In the way that I've been led to believe movies like Paranormal Activity and Grave Encounters are.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Anyways, we're going to come back with that movie.
Yes.
First ghost movie.
Yes. We'll give you some thoughts on it.
Yeah. But anyway, I hope you guys are all staying safe out there in this crazy outbreak.
Yes. Stay inside. Listen to us instead of going out.
Yeah.
I should have told you that at the beginning. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. Anyway, hope everybody is safe. Thank you for listening and be cool to each other.